Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Middle Ground on the Coffee Party USA Internet Radio Network, hosted by Blog Talk Radio. The Middle Ground looks at today's political issues from left, right, and center. We're always civil and always looking for that middle ground where real conversation begins. You're here tonight with hosts Eric Feiler and Michael Charney. We thank you for joining us and hope you enjoy the next hour of The Middle Ground.
Good evening, everyone around the country. I appreciate your spending an hour with us tonight on The Middle Ground. We're here every Tuesday evening, myself and co-host Eric Feiler, who's calling in from Selma, Alabama, where he's continuing his journeys on some days he might even call them travails associated with the Story of America project with Annabelle Park. We'll get a report on that as well, in addition to our main topic for tonight. I do want to say, if you hear some crickets or some chirping or some frogs in the background, it's a gorgeous evening in New Hampshire. I have my window open and I'm listening to the sounds from the woods near my home. So hopefully that won't bother any of you, but it's that time of year. I love it as spring starts to break here in New England, and you can leave the windows open and it's lighter in the evening. So it's putting me in a pretty good mood, which I'm going to ruin in just a moment. So the topic for tonight is civility, and it's something that obviously the Coffee Party takes very seriously. We have the Civility Pledge, and we ask everyone who become a member to virtually sign the Civility Pledge, says that they will conduct themselves in civil conversation with people, and it's an important part of what the Coffee Party stands for, and. In some ways, we kind of take it for granted. We don't often broach the subject directly. Are we really being civil? Are our members being civil? Are our fans being civil? Are we being civil to each other? And I've been kind of paying attention to that for the last week or so. And some of this came out of the responses and the comments, not just in the Coffee Party, but elsewhere, after the bombing in Boston. And, of course, these kinds of things bring out the fear in a lot of people, and fear brings out anger, and fear and anger often bring out us-them mentality, only amplified, of course, when it's reinforcing a belief you already have. And so I was noting a lot of the conversation seemed to be breaking away from certain kinds of civility. And so I spent some time on our own Facebook page and kind of looking through the kinds of posts that we've been putting out and some of the responses that we've been getting. And frankly, I felt the need to rant a little bit. And I'm actually going to read you some of those. I want to bring Eric in. I want to invite people very strongly tonight to call in to talk about this issue of are we being civil? Why do we think we are when some other people think we're not? What can we do better about having civil conversation? And I'm also very interested in people's opinions about whether or not they think that we who moderate the Coffee Party media sites should perhaps be a little bit more forceful about enforcing our civility statements. There's this fine line between not wanting to censor people's voices, but there's also the question of, you know, at what point do we say enough is enough? I'm going to go ahead and bring Eric in before I introduce a few of the examples that I have, and I see a few callers are already starting to line up, which is great. Our number on The Middle Ground is 646-929-2495, and if you'd like to join the program, and we encourage you to join the program, it's your show as well as ours after all, please press 1. Again, it's 646-929-2495, and if you press 1, we'll know you're interested in speaking with us. So first of all, welcome, Eric. You've been, you know, traveling all over the place. And I imagine that your travels across the country, you've bumped into civility issues at some point or another in filming Story of America. So maybe I would kind of get your your wider take on this. I know, for example, Annabelle is brilliant at disarming incivility when she sees it. She's very, very good at it. But I still imagine you must have run into something, some stuff here or there. So tell me, first of all, is it just me? Am I just feeling it for some reason, maybe because I'm close to Boston? Or is it just not getting any better?
I think there was some hope that it would get better after the 2012 election was over. And given that we're an all-volunteer organization and it's actually a lot of work to remove comments that are remove comments that are uncivil, I think at the end of 2012, I think we kind of said, well, there's not too much we can do. People are really agitated about the election, but it'll get better in 2013. Because frankly, it was better in 2011 than it had been in 2010. But then maybe it's, you know, it has to do with some of these, you know, really traumatizing events in recent weeks and months. I think that the comments on our page are crossing the line from time to time, even stuff that's posted by some of our own, you know, leaders in the Coffee Party. And so for me, civility is not something where you're holding your fist up ready to punch somebody if they cross that line, but rather you're reaching out your hand to that person to say, have you thought about how an African American might hear that comment? Or have you thought about how a white Southerner might hear that comment? Or have you thought about how a Republican might hear that comment? I think we have to say often. And so I think it's a process and it's a conversation that we invite people to when we say, take the civility pledge, rather than a rigid sort of club where you can be kicked out if you say the wrong thing. So I guess that's where I am with it right now.
Yeah, I guess perhaps I'm responding a little bit more strongly. And I want to warn listeners, I have some examples that I'd like to read to you to give you a sense of what's been setting me off. And these examples all come within the last 24 hours. So this is not something where I've gone back and cherry-picked a lot of stuff that it was hard to find examples. It's pretty constant. And with respect to Facebook, just about any post, whether seemingly innocuous or sometimes, you know, hyperbolic, and as you mentioned, Eric, we cross the line sometimes ourselves. These were not hard to find for me. And there is some language in it. That's what I wanted to warn everybody about. So if you're listening with children nearby, I suggest you cover their ears. Some of you may want to cover your own. I don't know. But I do, you know, there may be a couple of, here that have some examples. So if I take one, just one from today, and this one is not particularly, there's no language problem here, but it speaks to Eric's, the point, Eric, you just made. There was a post, and I think it was from Egberto, and he was linking to something which I guess ranked the airports internationally, like the best and worst airports in the world. And the blog posting was, quote, there's no American airport in the top 25. You will not believe who beats us. The self-inflicted decline continues. And I have to give Egberto credit. He knows how to fashion his slug line in a way that makes you want to click through and read more. So, of course, everybody was clicking through to see who was beating us. But I'll just give you two examples of what I consider incivility that were on that, and there weren't a ton of responses. The first one hit me personally because, Eric, to your point, you know, there aren't a lot of people, I think, or there are fewer people than I'd hoped in the Coffee Party who will put themselves in a Republican's shoes for 30 seconds before they type. So the one that got to me was this response, and I'm leaving names out of it, obviously, but these are real responses. Republican psychos have succeeded in degrading America into a third world nation. So, you know, immediately there's this dehumanization, there's this us and them, there's, you know, in that simple sentence alone, there's no sense that this person will ever have a concrete dialogue with anyone he considers a Republican or she considers a Republican. On that same post, we have this one. If we allow the wackadoodle, and I have to give credit, wackadoodle is not terrifically insensitive, but we go on. If we allow the wackadoodle jihadists, okay, to dictate policy in this country, we can expect to become a country of dirt roads, theocracy, women in ankle dresses with their hair in a bun and no makeup, and shootouts at high noon to settle conflicts. They need to be stopped now, with the word now in capital letters. Now, you, a person might look at that and go, well, okay, so, you know, that's an opinion, and there's no really rough language in there. But using words like jihadists shuts off conversation. And for me, and I guess I want to get your opinion on this, Eric, for me, the incivility line is crossed when you shut off conversation. When your comment basically says, no matter what anyone else says to me on that side, no matter what any one of them may counter with, a Republican psycho or a jihadist, I basically shut down the conversation with that kind of language. And to me, that is a fundamental definition of incivility. And that is, frankly, rampant. It's not just obviously rampant on our Facebook page, but that's one place where it really is rampant. Do you agree with that definition, Eric? Or am I being too sensitive?
Well, I mean, all I can say is that I don't have a lot of respect or regard for that tactic, because the way I read it, it's, you know, a person is trying to push the debate in the direction they want it to go, but they don't have a lot of time to say anything really involved. So they're just going to use a word like jihadist to connect the Tea Party to jihad, the I guess, Arabic word for holy war. And then I guess whoever is going to be affected by that is, you know, it basically the aim is so that that person doesn't have to think, because obviously if the Tea Party is at war with its own country, then we can't really consider any of their ideas valid. And I don't like seeing that when ordinary citizens do it, because I don't like seeing it when super PACs and political campaigns do it, because really that's the whole aim of political advertising, is to make it so you don't even have to think about it. Because if Barack Obama was born in a madrasa in Kenya and he wants the terrorists to win, then of course you can't even think about voting for him, or you can't even think about rooting for your own country as long as he is in the White House. And there's nothing positive that can come out of it, and I frankly find it kind of lazy.
Lazy is, I think, a kind way to phrase it. It certainly is lazy, and it's about as far from intellectual and interesting conversation as you can get. There's no question about it. But for me, it does go over the line. There's a few buttons that get pushed all the time. I guess for me, that I hate being lumped in. You know, my belief is that the Republican Party is fundamentally in schism. And with the extreme right wing of the party being nothing like what Republicans have been historically, and I don't consider those people to be, I'll put it in air quotes here, true Republicans. So to be lumped in into that bucket, we have there was one here that I really love. So there was a post. And here's one, I think, where I don't know which one of us posted this one, but this is one where I thought we stepped over the line a little bit. There was a post about, there was a letter, it was somebody who had responded to, it was a response, it was regarding a Rush Limbaugh fan, and it was a long letter from this Rush Limbaugh fan, who I guess was a dentist, who was responding to somebody else. It's an interesting read, by the way, if you haven't been to our Facebook page. But we actually put it up. In a way that was derogatory, the idea that the Rush Limbaugh fan was right. And I read that post and I thought to myself, we shouldn't be headlining this as if we're attacking the guy who's a Rush Limbaugh fan. It's Rush Limbaugh's ideas and his rhetorical techniques and his destruction of decent conversation that is traditionally the Coffee Party target, right? Not people. And this particular post was set up to go after the person, and then the Facebook fans responded. So the headline was you know, it had something to do with peering into the soul of Rush Limbaugh fans, and I lost track of the number of comments that basically said Rush Limbaugh fans don't have souls, right? And I thought, well, you know, why do people want to do that? And then there was a great exchange, and of course, you know, Facebook now has the new capability, if you all haven't seen it, where you can reply directly to somebody else's comment. So you can create sort of that chain of commentary. So there was a reply to this post that said, why do all right-wingers somewhere in their rants mention patriots and great Americans as if anyone who has different views are socialist and commies? No, that's fine so far. It's a question. Then he goes on to say, I'm tired of these jackasses and their holier-than-thou attitudes. Again, you know, not terribly, but I love the response. Somebody responded to that by saying, yes, don't you hate it when people are judgmental? And whoever wrote that, that's the guy I want to be friends with, the guy who recognizes the irony in some of this. My own post today, right, the post for this show, asked the question, are we too mean to each other? And the response is, we're just... The irony in the Merrick was amazing. So here, when I asked the question, and I forget the exact wording of my post, it was, tonight on the Middle Ground, why are we all so damn mean to each other? And I particularly, I used that language a little bit abrasively, intentionally. And the actual name of the show is A Civil Faction, right? Is civility even possible anymore? And on a post that questions whether civility is possible, these are the kinds of responses that came through. Personally, I view people who vote for Republicans as my enemy. I don't respect them. I don't like them. I have no interest in having civil discussion with them. And this is a response to a post about civility. Another one. They are an enemy that is trying to destroy everything I believe in. If they feel the same way about me, I don't care. And my favorite, my feelings about Republicans are pretty similar to how I feel about Al-Qaeda. And I read that and I went, honestly, I had one of those moments, Eric, where I thought, why do I get up and do this every day? and I realize there may be a way that I can reach a guy like that, that can understand that there's more than one flavor of Republican. But he just compared half of the voting population, maybe slightly less than half of the voting population in this country, and put them into a bucket and made them the equivalent of Al-Qaeda. Where do we go from that kind of conversation? I'm going to give you a chance to respond, and then we've got some people lined up, and we'll start taking some calls because I'm really curious to hear what people have to say. But,
mm-hmm. Okay, sure. While I respond, why don't you go see who they are, and then we won't have to identify them by the area code.
okay, all right. I'll do that.
I'm pretty sure I know who the first one is.
Right.
But, okay. Annabelle and I, actually, she's in the room right now. She's finishing up a video for Story of America that y'all can see in a little while after we upload it. But we've been working on this problem. Well, really, since before the coffee party, and the name of the next video for Story of America is called Healing in the Heart of the Divide. We're in Selma, Alabama, which is the birthplace of the Voting Rights Act, and also, of course, famously, Bloody Sunday, which led directly to the Voting Rights Act. And I believe it was within a week that with Lyndon B. Johnson really leaning on Congress, they actually passed the Voting Rights Act. Annabelle says, no, it wasn't within a week. No?
4 months.
4 months? Oh, gosh, okay. It took 4 months. Johnson's speech before a joint session of Congress was within days, however. Okay. And what we found, we've also been filming in Detroit, and what we found is that there are a number of cities, including Detroit, where there was violence in response to, for instance, the assassination of Martin Luther King. There were different kinds of race riots. And I think one of the ways in which the oppression of African Americans has been made politically viable over the years, just, you know, starting from the very beginning of the Reconstruction era, when they essentially outlawed black participation in elections for 100 years until the Voting Rights Act. The idea was is that black people were dangerous and that they were, you know, similar to the kind of stuff that Michael was just reading of what, you know, some people were saying about Tea Party people and Republicans, that they're basically an enemy within. And so the struggle during civil rights included a lot of violence. A lot of that violence was directed at African Americans. And then there were also you know, things like looting or whatever, turning cars over, that kind of stuff that African Americans did in response to some of that violence. And I think that that period has resulted in a divide in this country, in which the old Southern grievances from the Civil War were essentially spread, like blood circulation spreads an infection throughout our country. And so white people, I think, in rural parts of the United States that remained quite homogenous even after desegregation, even after, you know, even after we kind of entered this more modern era, are susceptible to narratives that basically posit black people as an enemy within. And I think that because I think one of our two political parties has been sort of pushing that angle, sometimes subtly, sometimes not as subtly, and we've fused racial antagonism with partisanship, I think that's why it has gotten so bad. And what gives me hope is the kind of stuff that I'm seeing in Selma these past few weeks. We have interviewed many African Americans, and we've interviewed many, I don't want to quite call them Confederate Americans, but people who were here this past weekend to celebrate Confederate Memorial Day, to honor Confederate soldiers and leaders, generals, including Nathan Bedford Forrest, who is also known as one of the founders of the Ku Klux Klan. And we have we've documented and interviewed people at the Battle of Selma reenactment, very interesting, beautiful. I can't believe how real it looked, reenactment of the Civil War battle that took place here exactly 100 years or nearly exactly 100 years before Bloody Sunday, when African Americans marching for voting rights tried to cross the Edmund Pettus Bridge. And just about everybody here, I think they have two things in common, regardless of who we talk to. One is that their first inclination is to focus on people on the other side who have hurt them the most, whose comment or accusation has hurt them the most. And unfortunately, will sort of taint their... They'll allow their view of the entire community of, you know, the other, quote unquote, to be tainted by the person who's hurt them the most. But then, and you're right, Michael, Annabelle is really good at sort of diffusing that kind of feeling. Annabelle will remind people, but, you know, that one person who said that about Civil War reenactments, or that one person who said that about African Americans, that person doesn't represent everybody in that community, does it? And then they would have to say, well, no. And I think the combination of simply looking at someone and saying, okay, you want to be heard, I'm listening, and saying, okay, you want me to understand, I'm trying, just that little bit, and maybe the way Annabelle is able to communicate that she has a certain fondness for just about every person, every human being, she can find something likable about them, that really diffuses them a lot. And once they no longer feel like they're on the defensive, like there's a wall and it's their job to defend their side and all that stuff, you can just relate to people as human beings, you can find a lot of common ground. And I think that may be where things are headed in Selma, where I think it's possible that some of the division that's really plagued this town ever since 1965, people might be able to get over it, in order to do something good for their town and help restore it economically. So that's a story we hope we're covering here for our documentary.
Well, it's certainly, I mean, it's a great exemplar to see, I think, what's really, you know, at the heart of how to encourage civility, because it's certainly a place with a shattered history, and to this day has a lot of healing, and you know it's a town, it's a small town name that everybody knows, and people associate very specific things with that town. So I'm very interested in seeing what comes out of all of your interviews as well. I tend to be a little bit of an old-fashioned person. I kind of want to wait for the whole movie, although I have watched parts of what you've been posting here and there. But it could be, you know, I realize this isn't specifically the topic of the movie, of the project. I think movie is too small a word for what you're doing, frankly. It's a bit more expansive than that. So I'll use the word project. I'm really interested. I think if people in Selma can be, if civility can rise and be healthy in Selma, that would certainly be kind of a synecdoche for what we could hope for. I think you're right there. Shall we go take a few calls? Good. We're going to go do that now. And sorry, I realized you were muted out there for a second, Eric. I knew you would say yes when I said let's go take a few calls, so I'm just going to go ahead and do it. First up, we've got Neil from Fort Lauderdale. Neil, welcome to the Middle Ground. It's been quite a few weeks since we've heard from you. What have you been up to?
Oh, I've just been busy. How you doing?
We're doing well. So, so what are your thoughts on, first of all, tell me I'm overreacting. Am I nuts? Or are we?
Honestly, I mean, I'll be honest. I do some of this language back and forth with some of these people. I think they're nuts, but you're right. There should be some more. Everybody dehumanizes each other. Dehumanize, distract, and dehumanize. And we have all these, you know, pundits and celebrity pundits who say outrageous things to basically pour more fuel or gasoline on the fire every day. No one ever says, okay, let's just, as Americans, be together. Like after 9/11, everybody got together. After Boston, of course, it wasn't as bad. But the next day, everybody else was attacking each other again.
Mm-hmm.
There's no civility. The only thing that really bothers me, I guess because this is really substantive, the sequester, regardless of politics, Republican or Democrat, is having real effects on people. This is what this. I mean, sequester is taking meals, 4 million meals away from Meals on Wheels. It's taking cancer patients away from their treatment. 70,000 children are off Head Start. This is real. This is things that really affect people. Not that I don't like you because you're a Republican. I have many Republican friends, and yes, we disagree on a lot of things and we argue, but I respect them as people. I don't demonize them. I always say I try not to. There are some people that I think are a little kooky, and I avoid them if they're really into Ted Nugent and Glenn Beck and such. But you know,
So you avoid them. You realize that there are some people you're not going to reach, and some people you won't be comfortable having those kinds of conversations with. But you don't call them jihadists, right?
No, but when someone tells me that the Muslim Brotherhood, Gomer said the Muslim Brotherhood is in the Obama administration, and the reason that people are killing each other in the military is because they're so upset they hate Obama violating the Constitution. When people say that, I look at them and I go, wow, this person's crazy. There are people like there are certain Republicans I watch on MSNBC, and yes, I disagree with them on a lot of things, but they're rational. You can have a rational debate. They're not like there's not two heads on their shoulder. You can actually sit down and go, okay, I disagree, yes, and I'm not going to agree with everything you say, but I know you're a human being, and you know I believe in jobs. I believe in healthcare. I care about people, and I don't care who does it. When I see people being heartless and immoral and calling themselves Christians, I don't care who they are, I'm not going to take them seriously. And yes, unfortunately, that usually to me is a Republican. Because I hear so many things and I see things that really bother my beyond politics, just my ethical being. I mean, I believe in ethics. I believe in morality.
So, Neil, allow me to interrupt for a second because
there
was something in that stream that I want. I just want to point out, and it's the kind of thing that can create uncivil reactions, even though what you said wasn't uncivil. What you said was that you care about jobs and you care about health care. Okay? Mm. And the implication there is that there are people who don't, right? I think I would be hard pressed to find anybody to say I don't care about jobs and I don't care about healthcare. Maybe there are, you know, some real, real, real extremes on the bell curve of people who really don't care. But you know, and I'm sorry, quick tangent. A number of months back, we had a mediator on the show, a guy named Doug Knoll, I believe his name was. And he talked a bit about the idea that very often the goals are the same. So I'm a Republican. I care about jobs. I care about health care. I probably don't agree with you on the best method for getting there.
Okay? Okay.
But when we start saying things like, I care about this and they don't, when you're talking about the outcome, I think that's when we start to unconsciously create a division, a little bit of a division. So even though, you know, you and I have talked a lot, and obviously you're a civil person or I wouldn't keep bringing you back on the show, but even those little things, for some people, that's just enough to set them off and say, yeah, those damn jihadists don't give a damn about jobs. Well, that's not true. They actually care a lot about jobs. They just completely have a different way that they believe will get there.
You're right. I'm sorry for being absolutist.
I don't mean to call you out.
No. But
I'm not calling you out specifically. I'm suggesting that for all of us often use those kind of little signals in the way we think, and we don't even know we're doing it. And when you and I talk about it, we can talk about it. But you can be talking to somebody else, and that's just going to set them off. Or you can be talking to somebody who agrees with you, and that will engender uncivil commentary around Republicans. And I think what's really interesting in a lot of ways is we're only seeing the incivility that people are willing to attack with, if you will. But I believe that's just the tip of the iceberg. I believe there are a lot of Republicans talking to other Republicans about how bad the Democrats are, or the liberals or the progressives, pick your word, and vice versa. There are lots of people on the left who are, you know, having their own little tribal conversations. And going off on Republicans in very uncivil ways. So.
It's very, very tribal. It's like you versus, we're not Americans. We're part of like separate tribes, and it really and there has to be a bridge. There has to be something, because it's getting old too. Because I blame the media too, because the media doesn't really do anything to say, hey, let's stop this. We're all Americans. Let's work together. Get things done. We used to be this way. You know what happened. And there's no dialogue. There's just endless, like, you know, rabble, rabble, rabble from, you know, from both sides. And there's really no, you know, logic or common sense. Just like, hey, we know there's problems, but instead of yelling and screaming at each other and, like, you know, taking our fist at each other, we should sit down and, like any other relationship in life, compromise.
Or at least agree on that. At least agree that we disagree on methods, but not about that we want what's best, right?
Exactly.
It's kind of a starting place. So Neil, we got a long queue behind you. Thank you very much for calling in.
You're
very interesting, and I hope you're not upset that I called. Great to hear from you again. Please don't be away so long next time. It's always good to have you on the show. Thanks, Neil. We're going to go next to Chuck. Who's been waiting for a bit. Yeah. Chuck, welcome to the middle ground.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Good to hear you. So what's on your mind?
Well, first off, you made a comment with the last gentleman about jobs and the different approaches. And I would ask you to do some research. You said you were a Republican, correct?
Mm-hmm. A moderate Republican.
Okay.
I need the adjective. I can't help it.
I need it. I am an ex-Republican that followed the rule of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. When Reagan's bubble burst occurred, which was a exact mirror image almost of the Coolidge bubble burst that caused the 1929 Great Depression, and also when the libertarians started to insert themselves into the Republican Party. I don't know if you ever did your research.
I did a fair bit. It wasn't. I mean, libertarians is just one piece of it. I mean, the real invasion began obviously with the early days of the John Birch Society, pre-Gold War, right? McCarthyism and all of that.
At that time, Eisenhower made the statement: there is a small fraction of our group that we ignore at this point, but could be they're like a thorn that needs to be watched. That thorn has grown up. What I was talking about is like the tax breaks for the rich. That was first instituted by J.D. Rockefeller after the Civil War, and it led to the Great Recession of 1873.
Let me try to pull you back a little bit more towards the 21st century. What do you think? So I agree with you. This thorn under Eisenhower has grown into a bramble bush, and that bramble bush is part of the reason that incivility has risen. Certainly,
right.
Where do you think we go with this? I mean, and what do you? I assume you know obviously you listen to the show. You're a member or a fan of the Coffee Party. You've seen a lot of the stuff that's been on the Facebook pages as well, I'm sure. What do you think we should do about some of this? I mean, it's important to us, right?
Okay, you have to accept the fact that part of the libertarian infection into the Republican Party that started in 77, ALEC was formed in 75, and they have been infecting. That's why John Boehner's a member. That's why Eric Cantor's a member. That's why all your Tea Party members are a member now. They have been slowly buying control in. And part of their control mechanism is a flanking attack. First, they have the moderates that say, we are Tea Party, like John Boehner tries to say he is. And then you have the Tea Party that are like Michelle Bachmann, that are absolutely agitative. And those people, the best example I'll use, I just recently had an issue with a family member, and we don't speak. He knows I'm an ex-Republican. He still votes that way. In 2006, I told him to read my blog, December 2006 post, where I said, we're about to have another recession. We're going to have the same housing bubble we had under Reagan because we are following a mirror image of Reagan. He didn't believe me. 2 years later, he lost his home to the adjustable rate mortgages.
You don't speak with him anymore. Did the relationship between the two of you actually become uncivil, where you just couldn't be in the same room?
He got to the point where he threatened me with fighting. And I basically, because of where we were at, I said, walk away. He didn't. And I had a choice. Insult my family by beating him up where we were at, or walk away, because we were with a group of family members that were other than immediate family. It was because...
I hope you walked away.
Yeah, I walked away.
Sometimes, Chuck, that's kind of the only answer, right, is to walk away. By the way, the fact that you personalize the story is very interesting. I do have quite a queue of callers. So with apologies, right. I'm going to comment quickly and then move on. This idea that Chuck brought up, a real straight up personal situation, somebody he needed to walk away from. I do recognize that there are chunks of people that we need to walk away from. There are people, and I've said this before. We talked about it at the Coffee Party Unretreat. When we talked about the 535 project, that there were going to be some representatives that we were just never going to reach, that we're never going to respond, that we're never going to reach, that we're never going to hear what we had to say. And so why spend time and energy and money going after those? Let's talk to the people we think we can talk to. And I think Chuck's example is the right one. The question I have, and before we go into the next caller, Eric, I'm curious to get your thoughts. You are, and for those of you who don't know, coming out of the UN-Retreat, Eric is the director responsible for media, all the media work that we do at the Coffee Party. So he gets a pretty strong vote in this. I'm trying to wonder whether or not our equivalent, should we do more of the walking away? And the equivalent for walking away is at least, letting people know, deleting some posts or hiding some posts that we think are uncivil, posts that, for example, compare Republicans to Al-Qaeda. Or even one worse today, on our site today, somebody actually used the phrase, and I quote, "Muslim towel heads," unquote, on our site. And I didn't delete it. And I'm wondering, should I have? Where should we draw those lines, Eric, when we, that's the way we walk away, is we just kind of shut that down. Should we be doing more of that? What do you think as the head of media? Where do you draw that line between the open speech and the civility issue? Just quickly before we go into Laura.
I don't like the towel head at all. My cousin.
Not, neither did I.
My cousin went to war. He fought in Iraq. Chinese American guy. Actually, he's half Chinese and half Japanese. He comes back using a very similar term like that when he talks about the people who lived in Iraq. And I almost fell out of my chair. Chuck brought it to a friend, and I have to say, in my family, there are people who identify as Republican. It's as strongly a part of their identity as their ethnicity or religion. Those of us who come from mixed families, it's just hard to hear this kind of, it's the same kind of prejudice and stereotyping that we're encountering in Selma. And that is, you focus on the person who's done the worst thing, and you characterize everybody in that subgroup by that. And so I think we should delete those kinds of comments. We can also basically ban somebody so that they can't comment again if they do this too often. And early on in the Coffee Party, when all we were was a Facebook page, we spent a lot of time on that kind of stuff. Because it does take a lot of time to prune out all the ugly comments. The problem is that the people out there who don't want us to get anything else done, they could basically tie us up and prevent us from doing anything else.
That unfortunately is very true.
Yeah,
it does take a lot of time. But on the other hand, we've sort of I'll speak out to the audience. There are roles available for volunteers that we can begin to bring into some of this process as well. If we feel as a group that some of what we're allowing to get through is, and I even hate hearing that kind of language coming from my mouth, the idea that we allow what people say, but there is some stuff that's just over the line. And by the way, I didn't know that we could actually ban people, and it's probably good that I didn't know that today, because the mood I was in, I think there would have been 20 or 25 people who would have been gone. Because today was, like I said, all these, I only read about 15 or 20% of the quotes that I pulled off today. Anyway, let's go ahead. We've got Laura from Ohio on the line. Hi, Laura. How are you? Let me ask you a question. Do you think we should be eliminating some posts when we hear things like that, or do you think we should kind of keep it? It's a free speech platform, and let the chips fall where they may.
I think it depends on what you think your purpose is for having the page.
Well, that's a very good point.
Things that I'm a volunteer of is a group where we are trying to define more things about the Coffee Party. And I also think that we need to have some agreement about what civility is. And there are some words that people need to take out of their vocabulary. And I'm sorry to say this to you guys, but could you please take lazy out?
Lazy?
Yeah.
Lazy. In what context?
And it doesn't matter what context. That was...
Well, no, I mean, sometimes I enjoy a lazy afternoon.
Well, when you're using the word to say someone is lazy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's interesting, right? So that's a whole different kind. It's a whole different level of incivility, right? And people who would use that word, who say that there are a lot of lazy people out there who are on welfare, for example. I saw that today. And people sort of hide behind the idea that, you know, it's true, quote unquote. It is a fact. There are lazy people who are on welfare. I'm sure there's at least two, which makes it valid, right, across the country. But to your point...
Wait a second, Mike.
Okay.
One, when you say someone is lazy, that is your perspective. It is not a truth. That is a conclusion that you drew. That does not make it a fact.
That's a fair point. You're absolutely right, Laura. You're right.
Are purely a conclusion from your perspective. That does not make it an immutable fact. It could be a medical condition that you know nothing about. Fatigue syndrome and all kinds of stuff could be mistaken for laziness.
I completely agree, and you're right that I presented something as fact when I don't know.
Well,
the point I was making, though, is I'm actually agreeing with you, all right?
That was my point, is that everybody assumes things because they are ignorant. They live in a bubble of ignorance, and a lot of them don't want to know that they are ignorant.
Well, so I'll throw it back on you, Laura. Ignorant, too, is an interpretation.
Well, it kind of depends on who you want to listen to, doesn't it?
It does. So, and this is a really interesting conversation because there's two things that came out of this. One is you're absolutely right about the purpose of the Facebook page is to provide a community that is, at least one of the purposes, that is, you know, independent, that gives people a voice who would not otherwise have a voice because the mainstream media, the 1% media, I don't like mainstream media, the media conglomerates that control most of what we see through traditional channels is essentially a one-way microphone. It's a one-way megaphone, right?
Well,
and so the Facebook page, along with these shows, are intended to provide opportunities for people to have conversations. And but underscoring that is this idea that we want these conversations to be civil. And so I think it's a very good point that you make. If I'm right about the purpose, then we do have a responsibility to be as lenient as we think is reasonable in order to foster those conversations. On the other hand, as you also point out, there are very subtle kinds of incivility, like using words like lazy or ignorant, like I used and you used, that other people could interpret. When I just use the word lazy now, I could hear your voice go up, Laura. That felt a little bit uncivil to you, even though you know me, and I certainly wasn't trying to be. So it is a real question of that, the empathy point, right? Putting yourself in somebody else's shoes for a couple minutes.
Everybody that can't find a job is lazy. So, and I've had a trouble finding a job. So that's why the word lazy really disturbs me. I've just heard.
Oh yes, and there are people who, this goes back to, and Eric has talked about this. Eric, you've talked about this a number of times. This idea that that we have triggers when we think of poverty. It tends to be urban and racial, when in fact that's not true, right? It tends to be rural and Caucasian for the most part. So it pulls up all of those kinds of things when we hear words like lazy and ignorant, somebody who dropped out of high school, whatever it might be. These stereotypes go off, and some people may interpret those as being uncivil. I think it's very hard, other than encouraging people to look at things from other people's perspective, it's very hard to figure out exactly what's going to set somebody off. So I think the lines for me are a little bit more specific in terms of the language. Anyway, Laura, thanks for calling in. We do have a pretty good queue of people. I want to try to get to as many as we can tonight.
Like when I said ignorant, I meant ignorant of all the facts.
I know what you meant. Just like you know what I meant. And this is why I always love having you call in, because you do, you have this sort of flavor of a perspective that I often miss, and you called me out, rightfully so. So
yeah, I'm a big picture person, Mike.
Yeah, that's why we keep you around, Laura. You keep me honest. All right, thanks for calling in. We're going to go next to Robert Merrill. I think we have more than one Robert in the queue. So, Robert, welcome to the show. Thanks for holding on for. I know you've been holding for a bit, as many people have, and we appreciate everybody's patience. What's on your mind, Robert? Are you there with us? Before Robert was on a cell phone, we were having a little trouble with his signal. Are you with us, Robert?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. Good.
Okay.
So where would you draw the line on civility?
I'm not sure. And the reason why is two things. Is civility called for, or are we at a point where civility is no longer really called for? Civility is no longer the highest virtue. And if we are at a point where civility is no longer called for, are there different responses? And I can only the conflict, and I can only speak to my own perspective. I mean, if you really do think that our problems are sufficiently great that we're at sort of the ideological equivalent of a war, in other words, civility is no longer called for. This is serious, and that's one perspective. And I think if you talk to people of different political persuasions, that's kind of what you run into.
Sure, but then what's the alternative, right? If you're going to be uncivil, then there's no way you're going to reach that other person. Then
right.
You truly are. Then you're not using war as a metaphor anymore. You're actually at war. I mean, you may
and
not be firing weapons, but you're going to use propaganda, and you're going to use financial means, and you're going to use whatever.
You're
going to
use intimidation, and I think that's where
dehumanization.
We are. Now, whether
how can that possibly be productive? I guess is my question.
Some people would say, well, maybe it can't, but it's called for. In other words, alternative is surrender.
Well, that's if you accept the premise that civility has run its course and won't get you anywhere.
Well, the civility is...
And by the way, civility doesn't mean you can't be angry and forceful, okay?
Right, right.
But incivility clearly means that you're not going to say anything that's going to get anything other than a negative response.
I think that's one piece of it, is that there are people who sincerely believe that the time for civility has passed, that the danger is so great... of whatever for source of danger or whatever issue, that the time for civility is past.
You're absolutely right. It's true on both sides. There are people who think that, yes.
And there are other... The time for civility is past. Then there's another problem, I think, and that's that most people are not very trained or disciplined in the art of self-control. It's really easy to push their buttons. So someone comes along and they says something and they... drop into fight or flight mode, and they either shoot back with harsh words or they storm off, and that, of course, reinforces the perception of the other side that, well, that you can't talk to them. So this is a self-control problem, and I think we don't really do anything as a culture or as individuals to cultivate self-control as a virtue, but it's kind of an aside. The place where I really kind of want to finish, and I don't want to take up too many other people's time, and again, this is very personal. I'm a old-fashioned Christian, right? I read the Bible, and I think it's God's word. And it very clearly, in the case of conflict, and conflict was very real to these people, in the case of conflict, we were very clearly told two things. Number one, to love your enemies. Bless those who persecute you. Do not hate. You know, bless them. Do good to them. So that even if you do think someone is your really sworn enemy, you're not to treat them in kind. And so that helps me sometimes when I think, you know, that person is really dangerous. They're really taking us down the wrong path. They're going to cause us collective harm. They may even cause me personal harm in the long run. But still, I'm called to love enemies, and that pulls me up short. And then the other thing is we're called to forgive when people do hurt us. And I think sometimes the whole thing of civility... we all make mistakes. I mean, I've been listening to these little conversations and hearing people taking things and kind of bristling. And instead, well, if our reaction is to work to forgive rather than work to bristle, and what that means is that we don't have to restore civility by papering over conflicts or by getting politically correct. Again, I just used a pejorative. But the idea being, you've offended me, and therefore I'm entitled to do whatever I want. Instead, the idea of forgiveness and forbearance, and again, I don't think this is an appeal you can make to everybody, but I think it is an appeal that can be made to Christian people like myself, not in a condemning way or in a, oh, you bunch of hypocrites way, but the question, doesn't it in your book say that you're supposed to love your enemies and that you're supposed to forgive?
And I think, Robert, by the way, I agree with both of those things, and I too am quite familiar with the book. There is a secular equivalent, right? And it's the golden rule. It's what we all started learning in kindergarten, or even earlier than that in some cases. This idea of and it ultimately comes down to what we were talking about earlier is being able to put yourself in somebody else's shoes for just a second, you know. For somebody who said the kinds of things that I quoted earlier in the show to say, somewhere out there there's a Republican who's getting up in the morning and he cares about his kids' grades, or he's worried about whether there's going to be rain because he doesn't know if his crops are going to fail or not, and that guy has really human concerns, and his ideological position does not define him or her. And if I can just spend 15 seconds and remember that, how would I want to treat somebody like that? How would I treat that guy if I didn't know his politics?
Right.
And that's a worthwhile question to ask. How would I treat that person if I didn't know their politics? Conversely, on the Facebook page, very often all we know is the person's politics, and we color them that way in a very uncivil, with a very uncivil brush. So, actually, Robert, I very much appreciate the biblical citations. I think they're right on. So thanks for calling in again, a long queue of people. I appreciate the call. We're going to move to one of our. I'm going to take a quick pause. Eric's been hanging out for quite a while, and I've kind of been dominating the conversation. And I know that our next caller is Egberto, and I certainly want your mic live for this, Eric. But before we go to Egberto, any thoughts on what you've heard to this point? I just want to give you a chance to.
I thought that this were some really great calls, I'm not going to lay down any laws or anything unless the entire board, there's 9 elected boards, members of the board of directors, wants to change the policy with, how strict we are on civility. I'm all ears, and I want to represent, the interests of the people who call in, because there's, they're the people who care the most and invest the most and contribute the most to our conversation. So I'm listening, and I'll weigh in once we have a shorter line of callers.
Great. I just want to take a second. So we also have a chat room going, and one of the people in the chat room just put up a quote by Martin Luther King that I think is worth reading. Let no man pull you low enough to hate him. And I think it's a wonderful quote, I just saw it now, and I think it dovetails very nicely with what Robert was just talking about a moment ago. I think it's a wonderful thing to keep in mind. Let's go to Egberto. Egberto, as many of you know, is a coffee party. He's on the Coffee Party Board of Directors and hosts his own show on Saturday called Politics Done Right, which is a Saturdays at. We're in different time zones, Egberto. I think it's
1 p.m. Eastern. 12
1 Eastern, right. 12 Central, 1 Eastern.
Yeah.
How are you, my friend? What would you like to chat about tonight?
Excellent, my friend. Two things. First of all, let me preface what I'm going to say because it references Laura. I love Laura. I've heard from Laura before. Laura is a cherished member of Coffee Party. But I think what Laura did with the call and Lacey is indicative of a problem that we have. I think the way you expressed the lazy was actually, I was most, I guess, concerned of you backing down from saying, okay, maybe lazy was the wrong word. The reality is there are people on welfare that are lazy. I'm a liberal, so I support welfare, all that good stuff, but there are people on welfare that are lazy. And you should not have, that was not a reflection of how you felt towards Laura's condition. and you should not have to mitigate your position because somebody may feel that way. I think what it was important is for you to state, I am not speaking about you, but the fact of the matter is, yes, there are lazy people on welfare.
Let me just respond to that. I think there's a little bit of a separation between my beliefs or my attitude and the words that I use. So I could have said, for example, and this would be factual, right? Because there are fraud statistics to support the fact, to say that there are people who are taking advantage of the welfare system to the detriment of those who would really need it. That's a fact I can state. And that's different and in fact more civil than saying there are lazy people on welfare, right? And to that, I think what I was getting from what Laura was saying is that by using the word lazy, it seems innocuous enough, but it really does set off triggers in some people that could be interpreted as being uncivil. Now, I also went on to point out that I don't think we can control our language that carefully all the time, and I personally am more concerned with words like jihadists and rethuglicon and some of the other things that I've been called in recent days. So, but I did get Laura's point, and so I backed off for that reason. I do think those of us with the microphone maybe have a slightly greater responsibility on a day-to-day basis. But you're right. I would not back off on my belief using a more factual approach rather than an opinionated word. So does that help clarify it a little bit? You're probably still going to rip me a new one for this, right? Wait, let me get your mic open again, Egberto. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's all right. Yes, here's my concern, Michael. I would love for us as Coffee Party to I hate to use the word toughen up people. But you remember that guy that just called and said it was a war?
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's really a war, but not in the sense that he's talking about. It's not a war that says I need to go against my Republican brethren. Because the fact of the matter is, living in Republican territory and having multiple Republican friends and really admiring you as a Republican who sometimes, you know, we get into it, I think this type of war is, I don't know if you followed some of the threads that I did over the last few days on the Coffee Party site. I got called the liberal whatever kind of stuff. But the thing about it is I only answered once why I wanted to tell you, and you know, you're talking about deleting comments or whatever. I think it's important for people to see the vitriol on both sides. In other words, there are people who call you Republican or whatever it is they call you, and they're people who call me the liberal, whatever. I think that is important for people to see two things. One, that it's not a one-sided issue as far as incivility is not a one-sided issue. And then I think another good learning for our audience is for them to see how we handle those people who come at us the way they come at us. Because I've never seen any of us, bar one person that we probably have to get, have a little talk with, but I have not seen any of us really respond to these vile people in this kind of a manner. We always try to keep an even keel, and a lot of times that is what actually decommissioned them or even changed their tones. I think that's one of the reasons why on all our shows we get both sides of the equation, because that is what we do. But I think we have to make our followers strong. In other words, that when I listened to Laura, my first thinking feeling was, I don't want Laura to think that if you say something that somehow it's projecting upon her, but you're saying something that is a fact. Now, she may be in a similar situation, but it has nothing to do specifically with her. And, you know, that's why I pushed the one I wanted to get.
You know, I do see your point. And I also see your point, and I know we've had this conversation previously. I know you like to err on the side of leaving as much there as possible and letting people see what's happening. And personally, today was more of a thin-skinned day than normally. I should let everybody know that. Yesterday and today, which is why I decided to do the show on this topic. But I have pretty thick skin. You know, you know what I've written. You've read my blog.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You've seen my books. I couldn't do what I do without pretty thick skin. I am more concerned with the Coffee Party providing a platform for people to have those kinds of uncivil dialogues with each other. I'm less concerned, this is probably, maybe I should have clarified up front at the beginning of the show, I'm less concerned with the back and forth with me or the back and forth with Egberto when he posts something, or even the back and forth when Annabelle posts something. I'm concerned with the back and forth within the comment stream, where people really go after each other in sometimes very mean and cruel ways. And maybe, to Egberto's point, maybe the compromise, Eric, is not so much to eliminate those, although I agree, I think, you know, there are a comment here or there that would just be over the line. But maybe it's merely to periodically go in and point out what's going on, saying, you know, you're talking to you that way, and we prefer that you not do this, and this is not what the Coffee Party stands for, and being more of, I guess, what a traditional moderator would do when some of us have a little bit of the time to do that. Maybe that is a way to sort of slice the baby, so to speak. Anyway, we've got quite a few callers. I'm not even sure we're going to be able to get to everybody tonight. I hope we can. We've got about 20 minutes or so left in the show. So let's try to move through these pretty quickly, which is basically me talking to myself, telling myself to shut up and move on, which is what I'm going to do. Let's go to Linda in Northern California. Sorry, I started speaking too quickly. Linda, my apologies. Welcome to the show.
Okay, it's a good show. I was just going to say that I think that a couple more minutes ago you were talking about where would you draw the line on comments that people make. And I guess for me, I would draw the line up when it gets to be disrespectful. I used to moderate a news group, and if people got into name-calling, like I've been called a bleeding heart liberal, you know, things like that, that when it gets to be really like that, then I think that's where you draw the line. And also with trolls, what we call trolls, because the main purpose of trolls is to get on a thread where there might be some really good information being passed out, and they disrupt it, and it becomes all about them, and there's no longer any good discussion. Those trolls need to be, you can't get anything done, because that's kind of like what they do.
Yeah, I completely agree. On the other hand, Linda, so sometimes figuring out who's a troll is not as easy as it would think. I mean, I've been accused of being a troll before. And I actually ran a brief experiment on Twitter 2 years ago where I spent a week doing nothing but being a troll. And most of the time I was not caught out for it. It was part of what I was doing for my book. It can be hard, particularly when you're having political conversations about pretty hot-button issues like, you know, gun control or abortion or immigration. Sometimes people are just really emotional. It doesn't necessarily mean they're trolls. But I do agree with you on the idea of the name calling. Again, it's a little bit of the question. I mean, I think if somebody called me, I wouldn't think that bleeding heart liberal is much more than a cliche at this point. But apparently, I'm wrong. If I were to put myself in your shoes, you might find that offensive.
Well, I know the person, so I blew it off. You know, I know I was never going to get anywhere with that person.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I was just going to say, because I know you got a long line, is I was just at the convention a couple weekends ago, and I went to the Progressive Caucus.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a lot of caucuses. There was the veterans and all like this. Well, when I went to the Progressive, because I consider myself a progressive, but I went to this, and I talked to other people that I know, and I was sitting with a man who I know to be progressive, and all of us felt like getting up and walking out, because my people, the progressives, were too far out there for me, to the point of what you're talking about, to the point of being, it was a rallying cry, we're the rebels, and that's all well and good, but I felt like it was getting to the point of almost anarchy, and I don't feel that that's the way to go to get anything accomplished.
Thank you for saying that. It often goes unnoted that, I don't think there's any comparison in terms of the organization and political clout and political strength between the far right and the far left. There is a far left, and there are people who are promoting anarchy and are promoting true socialism. But I think we're going to take to heart what you said. Name calling is a pretty good indicator of when a conversation is starting to break down. Immediately when you call somebody a name, you suspend conversation. I mean, people are going to move away from logic and react to what they're hearing. Eric, do you feel that's a pretty good? We have to kind of decide what the names are, but. So I would ask you, as you know, your thoughts relative to the media responsibility around being a little bit more active around moderating, like as Egberto said, not necessarily deleting posts except the ones that are clearly very big time over the line, but interjecting at least a little bit more often than we do, and perhaps make that the poster's responsibility. So I tend to go into my own posts and try to keep an eye on things. I know Egberto does the same. Perhaps that would be a way to kind of be a little bit more moderative, and also to sort of use name calling as a crossing line. What are your thoughts on that?
That's a good one. I want to get to Kelly in New York and Mac in San Diego, but I'll just quickly say, along with the golden rule, my mom used to tell me, you know, when you want to say something about something you object to, make sure to criticize the action, not the person who did the action. Name calling is obviously, you know, you're going after the person, and if it's a policy difference we have, I don't see why we couldn't focus on the policy.
Attacking the policies are fine.
Let's try going to Kelly in New York. Thanks for calling in. You're on the Middle Ground with Michael Charney and Eric Byler.
Hey there, good evening. This is Kelly. I'm one of your volunteers, Berto. While I was in the chat room with Arma Dealer, I was trying to make a distinction between Republicans and Tea Hatters. There's a distinct difference.
Yes.
So let's use Republicans and Tea Party. Because I find Tea Hatters to be. I'm not a Tea Party fan. But I'm not. I don't like the brush personally.
Well, the party members I have had face-to-face contact with have been seriously ignorant. They have, and a lot of that has to do with their news source. They, I'm very much aware of language and how it gets used, and. When you have a television station and basically an entire right-wing media that is very, very experienced in reframing and weasel wording and twisting things around, you're going to lose a lot of civility. It points out that the people in the middle, in the Republican Party, it's very hard to be a moderate.
Correct. Yeah. Kelly, we're having a little trouble with your connection. I think you have an online connection, but I definitely got your point. You're pointing to Fox News and Rush Limbaugh and the sort of the Republican media outlets as a reason why there's a lack of civility in politics, at least on the right. And that's definitely true. I just want to say, as a person who has a mixed family in terms of media consumption, I have parents who are Fox News consumers, and they are often mistaken about the facts, which is very frustrating to me. It's so hard to be civil, especially when it's your flesh and blood. But this is the thing, okay? People have natural fears that are as human as any of the other emotions that we feel. And the fact that marketing and political strategists have figured out how to exploit those fears and market basically the policies of economic royalists to people who really have no other, you know, no real interest in those policies other than their buttons have been pushed. I mean, who do you really blame? The people who are receiving those products or the people who make them. I mean, I think we have to save our harshest words for the people who create those products, not the people who watch them, because, hey, everybody has a favorite show, and some people's favorite show is not, you know, somebody else's favorite show. And I think that, you know, the division in our country, here's my pitch for civility, the divisiveness in our country is what is holding us back right now. It's what's preventing us from really embracing the 21st century and competing in the 21st century. And so if we can do something to not contribute, at least not contribute to that division, so that people can come together and not see race or political party or sexual orientation or religion as a reason to hate somebody else, then we're going to be able to tackle some of the huge problems that we're facing sooner, and maybe even soon enough, to avert disaster. So that's why I'm interested in civility. And with that, let's go to Mac in San Diego.
Actually, just before we go to the next call, I just want to come back, because you said something in there that is just brilliant, and it needs to be, I think, drawn out a little bit more. The divisiveness in our country, the vast majority of it, I believe, is fundamentally a manufactured product. You use the word product, right? And it is, in fact, manufactured. There are people who benefit from this divisiveness. We are being sold this divisiveness. And when somebody is selling you something, they expect to make a profit on that sale, using very basic sales kind of business language. And so the question we should all be asking ourselves is, who's manufacturing this divisiveness, and what are they getting out of it? And why am I not getting some of that, right? And, you know, you've heard me say before, every political idea is a product, every politician is a product, no different, and these things are being sold to us no different than toothpaste and coffee and breakfast cereal. And you said it in there, that there's this product out there, and it is. This divisiveness, I believe, is fundamentally manufactured. There's always some out there, but at the level like we're seeing today, it is manufactured. And it's to somebody's benefit, and it's not yours, Eric, and it's not mine, and it's not Linda's or Alberto's or Kelly's or Laura's. It's somebody else's. And we should think about that every time we swallow one of these ideas. So on that note, let's go to Mac in San Diego. Thanks for bringing that up, Eric. I think it was very well said. Mac, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling
thank
in.
Thank you. I completely agree with what you just said. I don't think there's any doubt about it. We know exactly how.
Now, the proper thing to say, by the way, Mac, you're supposed to say, Michael, what you just said was brilliant. That's the way we want to, I like to hear it. Okay. Tell me how brilliant I am, because I've had a rough couple of days.
Right.
Only kidding.
Well,
go ahead, Mac. Thank you for
that.
You're
right about
that,
though. It's like a puppet show. You see on the left-hand side a puppet, on the right-hand side, and they're going at each other. But then when you begin to look at the strings, you'll notice the strings go up into the darkness, and they go to the same point. There's someone above us, some entity, that is forcing us into modes in which they're dividing us along lines, probably naturally occurring lines, man, woman, black, white, that kind of thing. And they provide, especially through media, what's necessary to anger both sides and get us to fight. Once we're divided and we begin to fight, the rest is ultimately.
Well, yeah, then it becomes an effective distraction, right? So the question becomes, what are they distracting us from? And, I'm not big into conspiracy theories and all that, but I agree with your image. Those puppet strings probably go up to dollar bills is what I think. You know, whoever happens to be most interested in the dollar bills at the time, that's where those strings are going to go.
But that's only part of it. It may be dollar bills, but what do the dollar bills ultimately buy? I think it's control. I think we're going to a point now. The one thing about the right-wing group that you talk about, the conservatives, they talk a great deal about this whole thing called the New World Order. I tend to buy into that. I think that you poo-poo the idea of conspiracy. Conspiracy is everywhere, from the boardroom to the bedroom. I mean, you've heard the woman say, oh, but don't tell your father about it. I mean, what is that? That's a conspiracy. Or you go to a surprise party. Oh, everybody knows but him, but don't tell him. What is that? That's a conspiracy. Conspiracies are everywhere. The whole idea to deny a conspiracy is ridiculous. It's just, I hate to be uncivil about it, but it's stupid. It really is stupid.
Well, I think it depends. What certainly defining conspiracies you just have, but when we start talking about, so you know, we don't need to go with New World Order, right? So Glenn Beck is currently off on his conspiracy around the Boston attack, right? And he and his challenge is it is incumbent upon others to prove him wrong. Well, the minute you hear that, you know the conversation's over because you don't prove the negative, right? And you know that his rhetorical technique is not designed to do anything other than stir a pot. And he's doing that for reasons, right? He's doing that for reasons other than ideology.
But the other side of the coin is there were some very strange things about this Boston thing, just as there were some very strange things about Sandy Hook that raise quite a few questions. Are you aware of that?
Well, I am, and I've actually read and studied a fair bit, but it's completely a different conversation. So given that we only have a few minutes left, we have been asked a couple of times to do shows on conspiracy theories, and I would actually love to do that and love to have you back on that one. But this show is really focused on civility, and I think your imagery around the puppetry and the strings all going to the same place. And I agree with you, by the way, Mac, and thanks for the call. We just have a few more minutes, a couple more people to get to. I do agree with you that it's not just about money, although I think the money is a material object that produces that creates the pathways to power. But I do agree with you that it's power and control. Let's go. We've still got a couple, three callers. We're going to try to squeeze everybody in the next 6 minutes or so that we have less than the show. So we're going to ask you to keep your comments very brief so we can give everybody a chance to participate. We're going next to Steve in New Jersey. Steve, welcome to the Middle Ground. Real quickly, what's on your mind?
Thank you, and how are you? I will be brief. I think what you're describing is correct. I think the idea here would be to drive towards civility, and I think to accomplish that, I really think you need to kind of direct the conversation more. I think right now it would be good if the coffee party would like create a medium to be productive. And what I mean by that is try to create a greater clarity to the middle ground that you're talking about. And I think the first place to do that is to kind of towards the point you were making about divisiveness and seeing really what I think you should do is create one version of the truth. Try to get to a common set of facts. Certain people are working with their set of facts. Others are working with their set of facts. If we could kind of drive to one universal understanding, I think it would be a lot easier for people to comprehend what's going on. I think that's where, if you drove towards that, I think it would be better for people to say, all right, you know, open up the dialogue to anyone, but try to get to the facts as opposed to trying to let each person have individual set of facts.
Yeah, that's a very good point, and it's something it's been sort of mentioned before, not quite that coherently, frankly. But this idea that the coffee party could do a little bit more, not so much in moderating language, but in moderating facts. And facts are a funny thing, right? Because there are people with different points of view who can have facts that support their point of view. So sometimes context is important, other kinds of things, and that the coffee party could play more of a role in just shining a light, for example, on that, rather than necessarily calling anybody out for it, but just trying to be a little bit more, I don't want to use fact checker because that's almost become too aggressive, but, you know, maybe just illuminate the additional facts that might support.
Especially in the areas like Republicans are very, very important to them, this debt, okay? Well, what is the debt? How did the debt get, created? Who created that debt? I mean, if you start peeling away a lot of this information, you'll see Obama didn't do any of that, really. I mean, maybe 1.8 or 2 billion of it is really due to him. But now that you understand the debt, okay, why is the debt so important to you? What do you think it's doing? It's a percentage of GDP, et cetera. Try to get down to that fundamental baseline that everyone can agree to, and then it'll be easier to tackle it. Instead, we all just kind of say the debt's really bad. Well, that's great, but what do you mean it's bad? I'd like to know more about it. Why is
right? And we talked about this a little earlier. If we change focus in some of our conversations to what are the outcomes we all agree we want to achieve. So we want to achieve a future where our children are not handicapped by incredible taxes and incredible debt, because that will be a handicap for generations to come. If we all agree on that, then it becomes a question of methods.
Exactly.
That's another good point to help refocus some of these discussions around a common outcome, so to help people see that we want the same kinds of things, and to question those, as you point out, you know, not only debt but debt versus deficit. People use them interchangeably, and just to shine a light. And it's a really good point, Steve. I want to thank you for the call, and I apologize. I'm going to kind of move through. We still have a few people we want to get to, but great point. Thank you very much. We're going to go to next to a good friend, Robert Rodrigo, down in Atlanta, Georgia. Robert, a frequent caller. Welcome again. Nice to hear from you. And by the way, just so that everybody knows, Robert, I currently hate Robert Rodrigo, and he knows why. He went on the Cruise to the Edge, which was I'm a big progressive rock fan. So is Robert. We were exchanging notes on Facebook. He showed me on this cruise. He saw Yes, Steve Hackett, Nectar, UK with John Wetton. You said you sat and jammed with Jeff Downes from Asia and from Yes, and so I just have to hate you. You know that, right?
Yeah, and I had breakfast with Steve Hackett and John Wetton, and I had drinks with Steve Hackett and his wife. And I want everybody to know, when Michael said he had a bad couple of days, that I started it, so I'm kind of the cause.
That's right. Finding out that went on and I was not there. Yes. So anyway, all right. I'm going to let you stay on the show anyway, Robert. Go ahead. What's on your mind? Real quick.
Just today, the things that have come on my lap. A bipartisan bill introduced by two gentlemen to put legislation forth that there will be no more bailouts of taxpayer money for big banks. We have a Republican congressman out of Texas who spent some time talking about how the Muslim Brotherhood is totally interwoven into our executive branch of our government and taking over. We have another Republican congressman from Texas who decided to put together a fundraising trip and raised over $1 million, and all of the donors were all of the people that we loathe as far as money and politics are concerned. On top of that, we have a situation developing in North Carolina in the civil rights movement with Reverend Barber, who, of course, we all know from Eric's and Annabelle's story of America and about the voting rights situation. There are North Carolina, I submit to everybody, we need to pay attention to right now, because it is really, really exploding. And I don't like using that word because people think of violence. What I mean is that there is a movement going against what they are trying to do in suppressing rights. I say that in this conversation because, as you guys have talked about, the product of lack of civility and the product of polarization, et cetera, that we're talking about here is so good that we have all these things happening just today, and we're spending our show trying to get back on track to civility instead of dealing with the issues that why we're here in the first place. They have got us twisted, and we need to not take our eye off the ball as much as we need to be civil. But that's why we're doing this, people. That's why all of us are involved on every level, from every walk of life, from every view. That's why we need to talk to each other, because every single day there's something happening we need to pay attention to, that we need to try and change and make it work for the citizens of this country. That's my response to anybody who wants to spend time polarizing or not being civil to one another in any kind of political arena discussion where you're trying to better our country.
You know, it's a great set of comments, Robert, and the perfect set on which to end the show. You bring up arguably certainly for me the best point of the night is that we're not looking to be civil for the sake of civility. I think there is moral and ethical value in civil behavior, but as Robert so cogently pointed out, we need to be civil in order to affect the kinds of changes we want to change. Unlike, I agree, there are some people who believe the time for civility has passed. We at the Coffee Party do not believe that. But to Robert's point, we're not just about having nice conversations on Facebook. We want to have those conversations on Facebook because we want to give people a voice that ultimately will allow us to affect change in some very real ways. It is hard to respect somebody who, you know, an elected official who is spending our time and our money, and it is our time and our money, in order to figure out how the Muslim Brotherhood has invaded Washington. And we should be justifiably angry at that misuse of our time and our money. We should be justifiably angry at anyone who supports that viewpoint, rather than doing things like growing the economy, finding jobs, making sure people have places to live and are healthy, and all of this sort of, you know, blocking and tackling infrastructure and bridges that we need to do in this country. And the more we learn to have civil conversations with other people about those issues, the more likely we are to affect change. But Robert is absolutely right. We got to keep our eye on the ball as to why we're all here. Civility is one step on that path. On that, I'm gonna give you final word as we close the show down for the night. I just want to thank all of our callers. Too many to name, actually. It's been a great show. Lots of calls and activities. And Eric, I'm gonna turn it over to you to close us out and set us up with our closing music.
Okay, get ready to press the button.
Okay.
I thought it was a really great show, and there were great calls. Robert, you caught us on one, and that is that we did spend the entire show really talking about how we relate to each other as opposed to how we relate to our government. And it well could be that the purpose of these, you know, very divisive media products is to do exactly that. And there's two parts to it, right? There's one part where they want us to be angry at each other and focused on the person that's posited as the enemy in the soap operas that we watch, instead of what our government is doing with our time and our money. But then there's another reason why we want to be civil in our civic engagement, and that is the silent majority, or Annabelle likes to call them the silenced and alienated majority, the people who aren't participating now, but if they were participating, then it wouldn't matter how many news channels or radio stations or super PACs that our oil tycoons and war profiteers and Wall Street bankers purchase, because we, the people, would be too large of an electorate for them to buy. And so if we can find a way to infuse our democracy with more participation, then we actually strengthen our hold on self-governance, and we know that hold is threatened right now. So we need to create spaces like the coffee party and your home and your business and your family, where people can talk to each other about these issues without fearing that if they did, it would become so ugly and so angry that they'll have a really rotten time doing it. And so it is important, even though I'm, you know, Robert brought up some great issues that we could have been and should be talking about, it is important how we relate to each other, because we are a model, and because we have a large social network that reaches a lot of people every day, we're an important model for a 21st century democracy, where the terms as well as the issues are set by everyday folks like us who aren't political professionals, who aren't lobbyists, and certainly aren't super, super wealthy oligarchs who want to use divide and conquer tactics in order to keep their hold on power. So let's think about, this is something Annabelle said in a video that we're going to do in a couple days. Let's think about the children that we know in our lives. And Annabelle and I have met some lovely, lovely kids here in Selma the last few days, and the world that we want them to inherit. We don't want them to inherit a world where everybody hates everybody else, not only because it's a rotten place to live, but also because it really paralyzes the people. And when the people are paralyzed, the government has the luxury of being paralyzed the way it has been these last few years. And we don't want to contribute to that. So if you really care about your children, your community, your country, our future, do everything you can not to contribute incivility, not to contribute poison to political discourse, because it not only makes people more agitated who are involved right now, it makes it less likely that those people we really need to get involved, it makes it less likely that they will. So thanks for the great show, everybody. Coffee Party USA is our website, coffeepartyusa.com. Don't forget to put the www dot, because if you don't, you'll see our old website. And we've been talking today about facebook.com/coffeeparty. The Middle Ground is on Coffee Party Radio. We have 4 shows a week. The next one is Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, Lunch with Loudon. 1 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Saturday is Egberto Willie's Politics Done Right. And Monday nights, I believe at 10 or 11 p.m. Eastern, Dan Aronson hosts Press One for Democracy. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week, 8 p.m. Tuesdays on The Middle Ground with Michael Charney and Eric Clark.
That's our time for tonight. Thanks for joining us, and please share your comments and suggestions with us at conservatives.coffeepartyusa.com, where you can follow The Middle Ground and participate in the 99% media. Our theme was written and performed by The Consultants and produced by Van Gabriel. Please join us again next week on The Middle Ground. Until then, be wise, be strong, and be heard.